First, we talked on Central Time last month about Governor Evers' new clean energy outline for the state. Now we're going to dig into some of the projects that are in the works as part of the transition to more renewable sources of electricity here in Wisconsin. Earlier this month, California marked a period where just shy of 100% of the state's total energy demand was supplied by renewables. Is Wisconsin on track to follow in their footsteps? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about Wisconsin's efforts so far to expand wind, solar, and other renewable energy production? What about coal power? The goal seems to be to bring it down to zero over time. Do you think that's a good idea? Is there a solar or wind farm in the works for your area? Are you happy to see it or worried about it? Would you be willing to pay a little bit more on your utility bills in the transition period to help meet some of the expenses of the change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Lena Rold is an assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison. Her research looks at ways to optimize energy grid systems, integrate renewable resources, and manage the impact of grid failures. Lena, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
Let's start with this story in California a couple weeks ago. You pointed this out to us. They had just shy of 100% of their electricity needs supplied by renewable sources. Is that a big deal?
Yeah, I think it's a really big deal. It's really amazing to see that it is possible to have 100% of the grid in California being fed by renewable energy. It's a really large grid, lots of energy, and it's all coming from renewables. It's, I think it's above and beyond what many people thought was possible only a few years ago or 10 years ago or so.
Now, people here in Wisconsin might say, yeah, that's California. They have big areas with, I think, pretty reliable sunshine, for example. Lots of, mountain ranges and, varied terrain to capture that wind. Is something like that realistic here in Wisconsin?
So I think we can, we have to kind of hope for it, right? There's a shift that is ongoing. We see that the utilities in Wisconsin are quite aggressively closing down their coal power plants and coal generation, and that has to be replaced by something. And some of the really good things about wind and solar is that they generate jobs in the state. They are, energy that is being that comes from Wisconsin, rather than, for example, having to import coal or natural gas from other parts of the country. So, we really have the opportunity to reduce pollution that currently comes from the coal power plants and also carbon emissions, both from coal and natural gas, very substantially. And so, I'm at least hopeful that we are moving in the direction of more renewable energy here in the in Wisconsin.
I want to mention a couple of specific projects in the works. Iowa County has the Badger Hollow Solar Farm in the works, 300 megawatts. The Koshkonong Solar Energy Center in Dane County approved for construction, 465 megawatts. Those sound like big numbers. How much are those in terms of our energy usage here in the state, though?
Yeah, so I think it is helpful to think about that in two ways. So when we think about energy, we have to, and electricity in particular, we have to think about both the electricity we are using right now. So this is the numbers that you were mentioning, 300 megawatts, 400 megawatts. This is the power that is generated instantaneously. For example, if you take as a comparison, the Columbia Energy Center has a peak capacity of around 1,100 megawatts of power. So in that sense, those projects are really, around 70% maybe of the Columbia Energy Center power. So that is huge, right? The Columbia Energy Center is a big coal power plant. These solar power plants are actually kind of coming close to matching the capacity that we will need in terms of just power generation capacity. The difference, though, is that solar and wind, as we know, that energy is actually coming from solar and wind. And so we need sunshine and we need wind in order to be able to generate electricity. So that is different from conventional power plants like coal power plants, because for the coal power plants, all we need is coal. So once we have that coal available, we can choose when we want to generate electricity. So one thing that is really, really important as we are moving towards having more wind and solar is that we are able to ensure that we not only have capacity to generate sort of the total amount of power at peak generation, but also that we are able to match the demand for energy over time. And so that that is a challenge that needs continued work to look into and make sure that we are able to meet that energy demand
day to day. That reminds me of another project then, the Paris Solar Battery Park in Kenosha County. It's approved, again, supposed to generate 200 megawatts, but also provide battery storage for, they say, 110 megawatts of electricity. How is this idea plausible that, okay, we'll have these big battery parks that are going to store solar and wind when we get it, and that's going to smooth out, as you say, those times when we don't have the sun shining?
Yeah, so certainly like batteries can be a really important part of the solution to try and smooth out the variability in wind and solar generation. Also batteries, they can operate by themselves. They can also be charged by other resources. So it's great to have batteries. That definitely gives extra flexibility. However, there is also a limit to what we are able to do with batteries, because batteries are also expensive to build. They require chemicals to be built. There's cost associated with them to also operate them. Battery storage is important, but there's also, I think we have to see that if you look, for example, to California again, what we have seen there is that California does have quite a bit of energy storage, but even so, it actually charges up. So you can imagine if you have a 200 megawatt solar farm and you decide and you have 110 megawatt battery storage, that is actually just kind of an hour of the solar farm. And so there's a limitation to how much you can charge and how long you can hold onto that power before you have to start discharging again. And so battery storage is great for daily variations in solar. For example, you can charge it in the day, you can discharge it at night. But then if you get to, for example, seasonal variations, where maybe in spring, in California, for example, there is a lot of extra energy that comes from wind and solar that can't be used by the grid because they already have enough. They already are at 100%. And so they actually have to say no to some of the wind and solar power in order to make the grid remain stable. And what would be really great if it would be possible to take that energy and store it until the summer months when we need more energy because of air condition in California. It would, of course, also be great if we could take that energy from California and send it to Wisconsin. But that is the question of actually sending electricity across long distances. That is quite challenging because you need to have transmission infrastructure in place. And that is, again, something that is expensive to build.
We're talking to Lena Rold, assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison, looking at the transition to renewable energy sources of electricity, especially wind and solar. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Lena, we've got those projects I mentioned, the larger ones. There are also some smaller, like 90 megawatt projects in the works. How easy is it to take a new wind or solar project and plug it into that transmission grid you just mentioned so people can actually use the stuff?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think when we look at this, we have to remember that we need sort of everything. We need to have generation capacity in terms of just generating power at the time when we need it. It needs to match in time with the demand for electricity. And then we also need to be able to actually bring the power from the power plant to our homes and businesses and industrial plants, right? And that is the role of the grid and all the power lines that are out there. I mean, as a professor of electrical engineering, I always enjoy when I drive around to look at power lines. I know that there are many people who don't like to look at power lines, and I respect that. But we need them. We have to have a way of taking electricity and bringing it to our homes. And so it is very important as we are building out this renewable energy that the grid companies also are following along and making sure that we have sufficient transmission capacity to be able to take that power from the places where there is wind and solar available and bring it to the places where people need to use the electricity.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jack is with us in Milwaukee. Jack, hi.
Yeah, I've got a simple question for you. Using older technology, how many megawatt hours do you have potentially for using pump storage to store excess production of solar and wind power rather than using batteries?
Oh, interesting, Jack. I'm only vaguely familiar with this, Lena, the idea that you use that excess electricity now to pump a little reservoir full, and then when you need the energy, you, I guess, get a kind of hydroelectric thing out of that?
Yeah, that's correct. That's a it's an excellent question and a question that... So essentially, yeah, so let's talk about what is pumped hydro first. So what pumped hydro is that you have a hydropower plant, so a hydropower plant where you are generating electricity by letting water down from a higher altitude to a lower altitude. And so, for example, where I come from, which is Norway, there is a lot of mountains. And in those mountains, there are hydropower reservoirs or lakes where there is water stored. And then when you want to generate power, you can let that water down from the mountain and let it power a turbine that generates electricity. So it's really potential energy that when you have the water high up in the mountain, you have the possibility to let it down and then generate electricity. And so it's possible to build pump hydro power plants outside of the mountains. You can, for example, I mean, it's a question of, you know, how much altitude difference do you have? And so that here in Wisconsin, where things are a little flatter, it can be a bit of a challenge, right? You need to have a height differential in order to use pumped hydro. But there are some storage plants or there are people who think about how can you actually build these pumped hydro facilities in ways that they can work like a battery. And it is true that currently, as of right now, hydropower and pumped hydro is really one of the few long-term energy storage possibilities that we have. So when you look at the hydropower reservoir, when you have large ones, like more of the natural kind, you might have the ability to store energy in those reservoirs over several months. When you build a new one, kind of more in a location where it's maybe not, a mountain in and of itself, I've heard people talk about, a gigawatt hour of storage, which is a really big storage. It would be a very, very big battery. But in terms of like what the grid might be needing in the future, it would be really great to have this, but it might not entirely solve the problem, but hopefully probably part of the solution.
Jack, thanks for that call. We're talking about clean energy projects in the pipeline for Wisconsin. Lena Rold is with us, assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the practical side of converting to renewable energy? Do you have projects in your area? Are you happy to see them? Are you worried to see them there? Call in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Lena Rold, assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison. She specializes in energy grids and renewable energy conversion. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we look at projects around the state transitioning away from coal to renewable energy systems. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Ken is with us in Cambridge. Ken, hello.
Hello. The thing I live in Cambridge, and the farm that's going in, concerned about it because that's covering up a whole bunch of agriculture land that we should be using for growing food. The other thing is the companies that produce these farms and the people that okay them don't live in the area, and they don't have to stare at the damn things every day.
Ken, thanks for the call. And Lena, both of those are concerns that we've heard from some of the communities getting these projects. B, people don't want to look at them. And A, it's, using land we could be using to grow crops.
Yeah, and those are really important concerns, and they should be heard. And so thanks, Ken, for bringing that to, you know, bringing that to the conversation here. So there is definitely a question of, should we use, for example, agricultural land for photovoltaics? Is that a good idea? There are people who are looking into questions such as agrovoltaics. So can you actually use multiple use of the land so that you don't have to only have solar panels on it? And then, of course, the sort of buy-in of the community and the willingness to actually keep having solar panels or wind turbines that are often more visible. I mean, those are very important questions. I don't have any detailed and specific, you know, I don't know if I have a solution to share about those. Other than that, I would say that I absolutely hear those concerns. And I think that is super important to think about and you know, hear everyone's concerns and try and make sure that the benefits that come from generating renewable energy also goes back to the community where that renewable energy is being generated.
Ken, thanks a lot for that call. We heard from Bill on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who also has a couple projects in his community, including one on, he says, land that his family used to own. He writes, it causes some emotion to realize such productive farmland will be going out of production for 30 to 40 years. On the other hand, Bill writes, it must be acknowledged that continuing to burn fossil fuels carries severe consequences. So overall, Bill says, I welcome the introduction of solar projects. There's a lot of weighing of costs and benefits here, Lena.
Yes, and I think that is exactly the question, right? I mean, we, yeah, what is the right thing to do? And there should be a lot of weighing the costs and benefits because these are really, really big questions. You know, how do we actually continue to live our lives in a good way and then also make sure that we don't destroy the planet? So we need renewable energy. We need this in order to be able to continue to have access to energy. And then we also need food, and we also need... we need to have communities we want to live in. And so I can absolutely imagine the emotions that come when you see that there is this change that is happening to land that you are familiar with, and that there is change that is happening there. I don't know if I'm a technical expert,
sure.
But I really, you know, what I think that we as a technical community also are, you know, starting to think quite a lot about how, you know, what are the technical solutions that we can maybe help contribute to also improve energy efficiency and so on, in order to maybe make sure that we don't have to have as much transmission infrastructure, so many power lines, that we don't need so many solar panels, that we can get away with having the smallest amount of them possible. So, you know, as while also being pro renewable energy, I definitely see that there's a very important aspect of trying to limit the impacts on the environment of actually setting up wind turbines and solar panels as well.
We also heard from David on Facebook, who brings up the issue of nuclear being a cleaner, safer option. David says than even the other renewables we're talking about. But Alina, this is a huge topic to ask you about with just a couple few minutes left. But do you see nuclear playing a role for some of our baseline electricity generation?
Yeah, so, and you say it exactly there, right? The baseline electrical generation. So electrical generation is such that we do need sort of the baseline, the kind of power. There's always a certain demand for electric power. And it is helpful to have some power plants that are there and always reliably can provide that power kind of throughout the day, throughout the year. And so, you know, I am of the opinion that nuclear can be an important part of the solution. And there is also work that is ongoing in terms of making smaller nuclear power plants that maybe could be safer. But there is this question of with nuclear about the waste that comes from nuclear power plants and how to handle that. And of course, also the danger of what can go happen if something goes wrong. It's a CO2-free source of energy. And so in that sense, I don't think that is a source of energy that we should be writing off. I will say that solar is actually getting to a point where it is maybe more cost effective than nuclear power. And so there is a lot of questions here about, you know, what is actually, you know, how do we actually, what is the benefit of sort of having the insurance of base power versus having the cheapest possible available power? And some of this also comes down to how we as individuals and as a society might be able to change the way we use electricity, both maybe use less of it, but also maybe use it in a way where we can use electricity when there is solar and wind available, rather than when we sort of just need it right now. And if we took an approach to electricity, which is a little bit more focused on flexibility in time and space for where and when do we use electricity, that might also then help us, make better use of wind and solar, and then maybe we would need less nuclear. I think there's a lot of open questions there. But nuclear, in my opinion, is not something one should look away from at this moment in time.
In just our last half a minute or so, what are you watching most closely right now in the transition to renewables?
So I think what I was just touching on, this question of like, how can we arrange our energy system such that we are able to use energy when it is available? That I think is really important. We started out here talking about how California reached 100% renewable energy. That is amazing. At the same time, California also has had many periods of time where they are not making use of all the solar and wind energy that is available. And I think that is a natural part of the process. We can't get to 100% and expect to just get to 100% with wind and solar. We might sometimes overshoot a bit, but finding ways of overshooting less, or essentially making use of that opportunity that comes with that overshooting, like having extra excess energy available, I think that is an opportunity and also a challenge that I hope we can all kind of help contribute to in the future.
Lena, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Lena Rold is an assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison. She joined us for a look at the transition to renewable electricity in Wisconsin.